Good morning. Well, welcome back to the Outdoor Show. It is 5 o'clock here in the Bayou City, hour number two already on a Sunday morning. All right, let's go down to Port O'Connor now. Let's check in with old Captain Lynn Smith. Good morning, Lynn. What's up?
Oh, man, the water, the tide. The
water, yes, sir. Bulled up.
Boy, we got some tides, I guarantee
bulls
you.
On, bull reds on bull tides, man.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, we definitely got some water. But yes. It's good and it's bad, you know. It kind of pushes that water in, and I like it. We can get back in some of these lakes that we haven't in the past.
I bet you can.
man, you can cover some territory, I'll guarantee you. But, you know, I was looking at the weather for the week, and, you know, people don't realize that we're looking ahead. We're scouting and all that, you know, for our parties, and we're trying to make a game plan, you know, where we're going to fish and all that. And I look at the weather for the week. The wind's a different direction every single day. Every day is different.
Yes, it is.
I mean, every day. I said, oh, my goodness. You know, oh, it's incredible. You just scratch your head.
Earlier when I was talking to Kim, she was talking about, yeah, it's different wind every day, different wind direction.
It is. It is. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, you got to have a game, different game plan every day.
That's it.
I guarantee you. You better. That's why I tell people, you know, if I go someplace and I've got a plan in mind that I'm going to wait a certain shoreline or whatever, a certain spot, if somebody's already there, you better have another plan, you know.
Yeah.
You better have another place to go. But, you know, I've had people just come right in on me and jump out of the boat. I mean, that's their only plan. That's the only place they know they're going to fish, and that's it. I go, come on, guys. I mean, surely you got another spot you can go fish.
Yeah, come on in here. Y'all, you know, tie up to me, sit in my lap.
Yeah. Oh,
I'll direct you right to the fish, you know.
It's, yeah.
I know, man.
It's getting pretty bad. I thought it was going to really slack up now, you know. School started and everything. You know, hunting, deer season is fixing
deer
to start up.
And duck season right around the corner. You'd think everybody would be getting everything ready for the opener.
Right, you right. know? Usually it slacks up, but still getting bad.
Maybe nobody's going hunting this year. They're just going to kill fish instead.
I'll tell you, it's getting crazy. I saw a doe last weekend. I went in Sea Drift and had lunch with one of my neighbors, and we just were driving around Sea Drift after lunch and shooting a bull, and I said, look at that doe. And there was a doe standing there on the side of the road, and she had twins, and one of them was laying down, and it was a pretty day. It was kind of cool, you know, and that little yearling was just kind of laying in the shadows, you know, of a bush. And these young ones, I mean, some of them still have spots. They do.
Yeah.
And that doe just kind of stood there and watched us, you know. She just looked at us.
Huh.
The young ones are getting bigger. They're almost losing those spots. But you could faint. You could barely see those spots, real faint. But some of them had them late. They did. So I don't know. It's gonna be an interesting year. It will be. But I know down in George West, ranch manager told me that he said they weren't gonna shoot any does yet. The does hadn't kicked the fawns off.
may be a while for that.
I think so. I think they shot one or two cull bucks, and that's about it so far.
Right. Yeah.
Just trying to.
When you got that MLD, you can start early.
Yeah.
I've seen pretty good deer shot on MLD so far this year.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. For sure.
So hot. Yeah, man, you better.
Oh, yeah.
You better gut and gill them quick.
I'm telling you.
It's hot. I mean, who doesn't want to shoot a pig, you know, a big hog in this weather?
Oh, man. I remember one year I was coming out of the ranch, and it was fairly hot, you know. And I came out onto the highway, on Highway 59, and I was going to turn toward George West, and there was a Suburban came by me on 59, headed toward George West, and he had a game hauler on the back, and he had a pig on that game hauler.
He was
gutted, but he had no ice in him or anything. He still had the hide on him.
Oh,
and,
boy.
He was headed toward George West. It's hot. Oh, it was hot. I thought, boy, I wouldn't want to eat that one. Man, it was hot. Some people just don't know how to take care of game, you know.
I saw that coming back from Cotulla one year on I-10. I was out there around Sealy area or somewhere, and I noticed these ice bags kept flying out of somebody's vehicle. And it was just like that. It was a big black Suburban with a rack on the back of it, you know, like you hold a cooler in, and had this giant hog on there. It looked like a boar, but it was gutted like you're talking about. But he had bags of ice in the cavity, and all the ice would melt in there, and then the bags would start blowing out.
Oh my goodness.
That is disgusting. That wouldn't even be fit to eat.
No.
85 degrees outside and exhaust pipes blowing on it. Boy, I bet that was a good hog.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Nasty.
Oh, my goodness. No, you wouldn't want that.
Not me.
Even
as good as the Belleville is, I don't know whether they can make that one taste good or not.
No, probably not. Probably not. Yeah, there was a guy that had a sushi store, and we'd go over to that sushi store, and he said, "Oh man," he said, y'all got some pigs at the ranch?" We go, "Oh yeah. Oh, bring me a pig, and I'll swap you sushi for the pig."
Yeah.
Sure, no problem. He said, "Leave the hide on."
What?
Okay, we can do that, no problem. So we brought him a pig, about a 30-pound pig, you know, left the hide on it. We gut it, but we left the hide on it. And, we ate sushi and everything. And so about a week later or so, we go back in there. And he said, "You want another pig?" He went, "Oh, yeah, but go ahead and skin the next one."
Yeah, no joke.
I said, "I bet you do want us to skin him." Oh, man. I couldn't believe he wanted us to leave the hide on him.
Yeah, that's... It's good to, you know, strip them on down and pack them in ice immediately.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we had him hanging in the cooler, but still, you know, hide on, I don't think so. Because once they're hanging in that cooler with the hide on them, then it really makes them tough to skin.
Boy, don't you know that was hard to get that skin off of that booger?
Oh, man.
Jeez.
Yeah, you know it. Yeah, he didn't know what he was in for. He knows now. In fact, we took him two of them that day with the hide on. And he was, oh, my goodness. He had a job ahead of him. But he didn't want that anymore.
He needed one of those Bone View roll hide skinners. Like that dude you put on your drill and then wrap that deer skin on there from the hind quarter and just skin him straight down.
Well, that was something, wasn't it?
Well, it looks like it's kind of tough on your drill.
Oh, I know it. The boy just pulls it right off that deer.
It does. It really makes it better than all that pulling, especially when those deer have a lot of fat on them. You know, when they got that big, thick row of fat, they're hard to pull that hide down, man.
Oh,
it takes
I'm
two
telling
guys
you, man.
To get on it and just pull hard.
Because I take my time and I work it hide off the deer.
Yeah,
easy.
Just work it off with a knife blade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's what you have to do when they're that fat, you know, with all that fat on them. You got to do it that way.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I tell people at the beginning of the year, you know, we have deer that are shot with 7 mags and 300 mags, and the bullet doesn't even exit on the other side. because of all that fat that they've got on them. And it'll lodge on the skin on the other side and will not exit. So if the deer is, not, you know, killed, if he's just wounded and he runs off, he doesn't leave a blood trail, basically.
Right.
You know, and I mean, they're hard to track.
They'll seal up. That one that blows up, they'll quit bleeding.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you what, I've seen some deer so fat, it's just unbelievable. You know, just real thick fat on them. And, they're eating all that protein and everything at those feeders. Well, they just get rolling in fat. Yeah, I told you we killed a doe that on the hoof weighed 190 pounds.
I remember you telling me about that doe. That's a giant. Oh, that's a giant.
Oh, she
doe.
Was huge. She was huge. But, you know, she didn't put off the scent, and she never bred, and the bucks didn't chase her.
Yeah.
So all she did is hang around the feeder, you know, and just chow down at the protein feeder. So the bucks never got after her. Man, she looked like a four-year-old buck. That's what she looked like.
Wow. That's big.
God, she was big. That is big for a doe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one.
But
had a listener text me wanting to know, ask Lynn if you know a resident of Port O'Connor named Bob Allen.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Know Bob? Okay.
Sure do. Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Old time resident. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, that text came from an old school type guy, too, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Probably so.
I took one time. A real good friend of mine, that's how I met Rims, was through him, and took him fishing a long time ago. We were all young then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We were all young once.
Yeah, we were. Yes, we were. Let me knock out this commercial break, and I'll come back. Lynn, we'll talk about something else, buddy. I'll be right back.
All right, man.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Well, speaking of deer and hogs, no better place to have your animals processed than the Belleville Meat Market. And they never close. They're wild game processing. It's year-round. And if you have exotics or you're out of season, they take care of them. Excellent. And now with bow season going on and rifle season right around the corner, never forget about the Belleville Meat Market. Excellent quality. And they have a full menu of pecan smoked barbecue. They serve that 7 days a week, Monday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and they're now taking orders already. It's better to be early than late on their pecan smoked turkeys. Order ahead of time to reserve your holiday bird. It's a 11 to 13-pound average weight bird. They're really good. It makes a meal for 8 to 10 people. And check out their homemade stuffed pork tenderloins and their La Boucherie chickens, their stuffed chickens, and not to mention their great wild game processing. Their new sausage recipe is available. Try that. It's really good. And their beef jerky, turkey jerky, dry sausage, and dry sticks, great grab-and-go snacking products. The Belleville's been celebrating over 42 years, serving the greater Houston community. That's the Belleville Meat Market, where meat is our middle name. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show, 517. All right, Lynn. We are
all right.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, this week it's been tons of redfish in the bay, but there's so many small ones, it's been incredible, you know? I mean, 18, 19 inch fish, I bet we caught 20 or more. Easy. It's been unreal, the amount of small redfish we've caught.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the bay's full of them. It really is. And, I mean, everywhere I went this week, and I bounced around several different areas that I figured we'd pick up some bigger fish, but we scratched and scratched to try to catch keeper reds, and it was slow on the keeper reds for us. And we had like a five-boat deal, and we fished in the back lakes, and heck, there was a couple of boats zeroed as far as keeper fish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they caught a lot of reds, but they
caught a lot of undersized.
A lot of undersized. But, you know, when I was scouting for these trips, I fished a lot of the lakes, and I would drift them, throw topwaters. And, you couldn't throw a topwater without getting a blow up. I mean, it was, it was unbelievable. I mean, they were just all over it. But I had some good ribs chase it, and they chased me almost to the boat, just waking all the way to the boat.
Yeah.
But they'd turn off of it, you know. And there again, I'd change top waters. I'd go to different ones. If the wind was blowing pretty hard, I'd go to something like a top dog or something like that, something loud. And I with a top dog, I didn't even get a scratch, a sniff, you know. Huh. I said, man, I can't believe that, because I'd had good luck with that in the past. So I went with a small Superfug Junior, and they were eating it up. And even when the wind was blowing pretty hard, but back in some of those lakes, you know, it worked good. I mean, I was slamming them back in those lakes. And the trout were jumping on it too, you know. A lot of the trout moved into some of those lakes too. But anyway, I moved from lake to lake, and finally I found some, you know, decent reds. I mean, 22, 23 inch reds, keeper reds, slot reds, but nothing of any good size. No tournament reds, basically. But I was surprised. I mean, I bounced all over the place looking for good ones. But they really scattered out as far as I was concerned. And I even talked to some of the guys at the jetties, the jetty fishermen, and they weren't having real good luck either. At least the ones I talked to weren't.
Right. What, on slots?
Yeah, on slots. Yeah.
Well, we started, you know, our slot reds just kind of showed up. Everybody's catching them over here now. It was you were talking about, all bulls and undersized.
Yeah.
Now there's a pretty good mix of slots in there with them, so you just got to weed through them. You know, those little rat reds like you were talking about, that's like when you get on all these small trout. You know, there's better trout in there with them, but you can't get to them because the competition's so fierce from the little bitty ones, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to sit there and just keep butchering those little bitty trout up, trying to get a keeper out of them, and I get impatient. I move on. I don't want to tear them little fish up. I've caught
many
of them in my lifetime. Don't have any desire for it.
I do too. I don't want to kill them. You know, exactly. I mean, I went to one spot that I went to plastic, and every cast I caught a trout, and I caught about four or five, and I said, I'm out of here. You know, and but they were all, you know, 12, 13 inch fish. That was it. And I said, I'm leaving them. I even went to some wells, and, you know, a little deeper water, about 8 foot of water, and I would catch a trout every cast. But here came the porpoise.
I said,
I'm not going to feed them. You know, I'm out of here. So I left them.
Well, our wells in the middle of Trendy and up in the north end, they're loaded with little bitty trout, you know, 12, 13, 14. Maybe a keeper here and there, but it's not worth, you know, you keep hitting them, and it's better to just move on south down towards the channel. You know, the fish are better down there.
All the
slot size. You don't have to weed through all that stuff to catch decent fish.
Right. And then one of my jetty guys, he showed me a picture yesterday. They were on their way back in, and there was a buoy that had about a 10 or 12 pound triple tail. Nosing around that buoy. I don't know why he didn't catch him, but he took a picture of it. It was a nice one.
And you see him that, can't get him to go for anything.
I know.
Maybe a live shrimp. If you had one, you might be able to catch him on a live shrimp. Live shrimp always works best on those.
They don't pass that up. I guarantee you. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, we were fishing for trout around a rig one day in the bay, and one of my customers said, "What's that right there? Look at that!" And it was a triple tail. He was nosing around one of these pilings, And I said, man, that's a triple tail. Cast right over there. And they couldn't cast, you know, accurately. They couldn't get over it to him. But, yeah, that was a pretty nice one. And he was nosing around those pilings, boy. Mm-hmm. Man, oh, man. I said, boy, that's a prize right there, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you need to catch that one.
Great prize.
Oh, I guarantee
bonus
you
bonus fish, man. Throw that in a box.
That is.
Top it off.
You better know it. Yes, sir. You definitely want to eat that one. That's good eating.
Yes.
But
excellent table fare.
Oh, it is. For sure. Yeah, I'll take that one. We had about a 20-inch flounder one day, and my customers didn't want him. I said, you don't want that flounder? And they went, no. I don't need it.
Can I have him?
Yeah. And I said, I'll keep him. They said, yeah, go ahead and keep him. I said, okay. Well, boy, when I pulled my boat out, I went by Beacon 44 here. They have stuffing and all that for the flounder and everything. And, I bought a pound of stuffing, and I stuffed that flounder, and I ate off that flounder for 3 days.
I bet that was good, man.
Ooh, it was good. You
pretty
better
hard
know
to beat,
it,
buddy.
Oh man, yeah. And what I do is I stuff the bottom of the flounder, you know, the white side, and that way all the juices kind of go down into the thick side, and it doesn't dry it out, you know. That thick side's juicy, yeah. Not dry.
Right.
And, I tell you what, that makes it good. Makes it real good.
Well, the pan you cook it in, put a lot of butter in it. That way that underside stays moist.
Oh, yeah.
Moist.
Yes, sir.
Buddy.
Oh, making me hungry just talking about that.
Yeah. Flounder for breakfast.
Yeah. That wouldn't be half bad.
Well,
no.
People better get them while they can, because November 1st, that's it.
Oh, that's
no
right.
We're keeping them.
That's right.
You know, you think we'd have got one really good front, you know, to push in and drop the water, you know, the water depth, you know, blow the tide out and, you know, drop the temperatures 8 or 10 degrees and get some kind of little run going before the 1st, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen, so.
Yeah, I had this one spot that I took some guys in one day, and it was a gut that kind of ran through there, and I'd been catching trout in it, and so we waded in this gut, kind of stood off to the side and cast. We were casting corkies up into this gut, and we'd been catching good trout in that gut. That tide was going out, and we had good tide movement in there, and I'd cast these corkies up in there, kind of bounce them along the bottom. And we came out of there with 18 flounder, and we caught them on corkies in that gut. And you'd hang up on a little scattered shell in there every once in a while, but, you know, you'd jerk it, get it off that shell. But we had 18 flounder that morning on corkies. Yeah, along with the trout.
Yeah,
that was unreal.
You know, we used to do that this time of year in the fall. We'd wade in the mornings for trout, and after that trout bite kind of faded away around 10 o'clock, we'd either go out to the, if the wind was down, you'd go out to the river mouth and wade the sandbars throwing off into the river channel itself, and working tails right up those ledges, and it was nothing back then. For everybody to get their 10 flounder apiece. It was crazy.
Oh, man.
I wish those days would return. I mean, when
yes. Isn't that the truth?
Pop a wade and catch your limit of flounder in one spot.
Man,
a lot of our bio drains are like that. You know, we got all those bayous and all that marsh that dump out in the back of Trinity. And when those flounders start dumping out of those back lakes through the bayous into the flats on the bay, you know, East Bay's good for that, too. And pretty good flounder set up. Nationally, we don't have anything like we used to, but we still got enough to keep everybody going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
But boy, they killed a national holiday around here for a month or two when that flounder run would get on when they closed it down.
Oh man, I'm telling you. Well, speaking of, you know, like it used to be, I was talking to a good friend of mine a few days ago, and he's got to go in and have open heart surgery, and we were reminiscing about the old days, you know, back in '83, during the freeze of '83, and we were talking about the duck hunt that he and I made, and we were reminiscing about it, and we were hunting down here in Port O'Connor, and we talked about how pretty it was, the string of pintails that we'd come in with. And, you know, you could kill 10 pintails then in '83. And we'd come in with 20 pintail drakes on the strap. And that was a hunt, buddy. I mean, when you look up and you've got 100 pintails circling you, whistling and everything, I mean, you can't explain to people what that was like. I mean, that was an unbelievable time. And we'll never see that again, probably, ever. But man, he and I had some hunts like you wouldn't believe. And, you know, that was just, that was some kind of hunting back then.
Right.
But that was the freeze of '83. And there just wasn't any open water. Everything was frozen, you know. We ran back in there with our airboat and broke the ice up, and the ducks just poured in on us, man, because they didn't have any water they could sit in. And, man, they were falling in there like crazy, and we only shot the drakes. We'd pick our shots, and we didn't shoot any hens. We just shot the drakes. And, oh, my goodness. You could stand up in a blind. You didn't even have to hide.
You couldn't beat them out with a baseball bat. In '83. That was the same way over here in our marsh.
Oh, man.
They'd come into those marsh ponds and just slide on their butts on that
ice. Man.
It was
unbelievable.
Everywhere you looked in the sky, there's just ducks buzzing around everywhere. They had nowhere to land. There was no open water.
No.
They were all going to the Gulf to sit down on the Gulf.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
The guy that drove down to Bolivar Beachfront, and the whole surf was just full of ducks, thousands and thousands of them sitting on that water.
Oh, man.
Let me do this next break, man. I'll be right back, Lynn. Hang with me.
All right.
Well, folks, Boyd's One Stop, they're the home of the supercharged, super slimy powerhouse. Croker's located right at the base of the Tech City Dike at 227 Dike Road. And if you're looking for quality live bait for your next fishing trip, look no further than Boyd's. From their tanks to your live well, that bait's as good as it can possibly be. And there's no better way to live your bait or your tournament fish than with their oxygen response system. They have them on display there at the store. You can check them out. Or if you need more info, you can call Jason Cogbert at 281-701-8107. And when you're by the store, check out all their wild-caught Gulf shrimp. No farm-raised at Boyd's. Everything's wild-caught right here. And if you're looking for some really good food, their Cajun Grill next door has a really good recipe of all their different dishes and great pricing. And their Santa Fe food truck over there, that's been a big hit too. Everybody likes it. So give them a call at 409-945-4001 or check them out at boydsonestop.com. When you do, please tell them Captain Mickey sent you. All right, welcome back to the Outdoor Show. It is 5:37. Okay, Lynn, we are back. We were talking bull sprigs and lots of ducks, man.
Yeah, but you know, I have yet to see any big ducks. I haven't seen any big ducks down here yet.
Bink's been seeing a few in his area where he's going to duck hunt. They're starting to filter in a few gads.
Are they?
Yeah, pintails. We need a front, man. And
yeah,
plus
we do.
All the ducks get so short-stopped now, you know, north of us with all the more crops and, you know, water and everything else that they don't need to come here anymore all the way to the coast. Plus, we don't have the agriculture for them like we used to anyway, especially over here east of town, you know.
Right. Well, same here. I mean, we don't have the rice here that they used to plant. You know, we used to have a lot of rice planted here in Calhoun County And they just don't plant it anymore. They just don't do it.
Yeah.
And we just haven't seen the ducks and geese here like we used to. I've been on the water almost every day.
Right.
This week, and I haven't seen any big ducks. None yet. And I'm looking for them too.
Yeah.
But
I know you are.
I've seen
old duck hunter
I've
like
seen,
you.
Yeah. I've seen a few teal, but not many, but I've seen a few.
Yeah, like an old Cowan painting or something like that, man, with a
eyes
about hip deep, wading, catching fish and pintails buzzing. That's good stuff, man.
I've got several of those Cowan paintings like that, you know, because it's in my blood. That's in my blood, you know. I grew up doing that. Yeah, I shot my first duck when I was 7 years old. Yeah, and it was a greenhead too. I can still remember it. Yeah, and I was hunting in Cerium Marsh in Sabine Pass, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's back in the day when the mallards used to really come to the coast. You know, we'd have those
cold
winters, and they came all the way down.
Yeah, they did, and it was a foggy day, and I remember a foggy morning, and there was about 30 of them landed in the decoys.
Dang.
And my dad said, okay, and I had a single shot 410, Stevens 410.
It was
chambered for two and a half. Oh, yeah, chambered for 2.5-inch shell, And he gave me a shell, handed me a shell, and I loaded it. It took both my thumbs to cock that gun, you know. And I cocked it, and I stuck it through the cane, stuck the barrel through the cane. And I could see this. My dad said, now shoot one of the greenheads now. And about that time, they spooked, and they all took off. Except one, and one of them still sitting there. Boy, he's looking around like, where'd they go? And I shot him on the water, you know. I Arkansas'd him, what we called it.
Shot,
and
man.
I Arkansas'd him, well, shot him on the water. and that was my first duck I ever got. That was the beginning, boy. Oh, my goodness, man. I was so proud. I can still remember that. Man, I had my first duck, and it was a greenhead.
Yeah, everybody used to come to your backyard just for the bull sprigs for the pintail hunts.
God, yeah. Oh, listen, that
we were
freeze.
A 10-point bird back then. You know, we were on that 100-point system, and pintails were 10-point birds. Well, they are. They are giving us three of them this year. You can shoot three this year.
I've heard that. Yeah, they must have had a real good hatch.
Nice of them,
wasn't it? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that in 83, we ran across that bay, and that it was 6 degrees here in Port O'Connor. Six.
Yeah, big and cold, brother.
Oh, listen, we ran across that bay in that airboat. I was holding a Q-beam, that buddy of mine was running the airboat. And, man, we got to the other side of the bay. Boy, he let off the gas. We looked, and it looked like that north wind had blown the water out. It was ice 300 yards out into the bay.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, my, because that airboat would jump up on the ice and run across the bay on that ice and then break through.
Gosh.
And we got back in there where my blind was, and we shut down right out in front of the blind, and I jumped down, and I started grabbing decoys, just throwing them out. No pattern or anything, just throwing them.
Yeah.
And the ducks were just buzzing over us, just buzzing over us, because we were breaking up the ice. And they were falling in there and landing. I guarantee you they were landing 30 feet from us.
Wow.
When the airboat was idling around. They didn't have any other place to sit down.
They were tired. And, they wanted to sit down on some water, man.
Yeah, pintails, widgeons, and teal were landing all around us. And he pulled up, my buddy pulled up to the blind. He said, "Promise me you won't shoot until I get back."
Yeah.
And he ran the boat over about maybe 50 yards and ran it up on the grass. And then he walked back to the blind. I just stood there and watched them just landing in the decoys by the hundreds. You know, incredible. It was incredible. And hundreds of them buzzing over us, falling in there to the decoys. And it probably didn't take 30 minutes, and we shot 20 pintail drakes. I mean, it was the most incredible day you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, that was at 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah.
It froze for 12 days.
Yeah.
And I can't believe we were that mad at them. Now, my day and age now, at my age now, I'm not that mad at them. I was young and full of it back then. And, my legs, when you'd go to walk out of the marsh to go back to your boat, they just felt like stumps. You couldn't even hardly, they were just frozen. Everything was. You couldn't feel anything. You were miserable.
Yeah.
You're just doing all you can do to hold your balance to keep from falling in the mud, you know, and the ice. It was terrible.
Oh,
it was some of the best hunting. It's like going to Canada now, that kind of hunting.
Oh, I think it's better than that.
Or North. I think every bird from, you know, North Texas all the way to Canada was on the coast that year with that freeze.
They were.
That was, I remember when that whistled in on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Northwest winds at 40 and 45 miles an hour, and just that thermometer was just bottoming out. It was just falling like crazy. It got so cold so quick.
Oh, it was. Yeah, I was staying in a cabin down here at Lane Road. It's Fulgham's Bait Camp, and I don't know how many bottles of propane we went through.
It was still cold in that old cabin, man.
Oh, it was.
Insulation.
Oh, my God. It was
kind of like watching these old Western movies. Nobody even had walls in their house. It was just frame. You know, with just the siding, the wood on the outside, with no insulation or drywall or anything. Don't you know how it was cold back in the day? They were some tough people back in the frontier days.
And then we had a power surge. We're sitting there, and all of a sudden, all the lights turned blue. And we had a power surge, and it smoked everything electric in that cabin.
Oh, boy.
Everything. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh. But that didn't slow us down from hunting.
Well, I'll tell experts, the weather experts, if you can call them that, they're calling for a warmer winter this year because of La Nina is set in. And
they don't know anything.
To watch the squirrels and the crows and everything gathering nuts like that, and just this early in the year, they've been stripping my trees for 2 months now, which is why I grow them. I don't how many pecans can a man eat? But that's kind of a sign of, that's kind of the way it was in 83 and 89. You know, the way, if you'll listen to the wildlife, they'll tell you what's coming.
Isn't that the truth?
Man, the way the Indians did it anyway. They watched signs of the animals and the way the movements and everything were. But hopefully not. I mean, we need to recover our fishing before we have another event. My God.
Yeah, I'll never forget, running down the Intercoastal in 83 and all the dead trout and redfish.
Oh, God.
On both sides of the Intercoastal. Solid.
It was bad.
Real bad. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Both sides of the Intercoastal, as far as you could go. It was solid. I've never seen anything like it.
You know, we had so many fish back then in Galveston Bay. If we lost half our fish, we still had millions of them. I mean, I didn't see any fallout from it. That's how good our fishing had been, through the 70s, late 70s and early 80s. That even though we had that big significant kill like that, it just didn't register with the rod and reel fishermen. I mean, we still had tons of fish to catch. 84 was probably one of my better years I ever had in my whole career. Man, there was
Well, y'all have such deep water. You know, y'all have some deep water over there for them to escape, you know.
89, 90. Now, that freeze event right there, that toasted everything up here. We two nights in a row in Trinity Bay, it was 7 degrees at my house, two nights in a row.
Man.
Well, the bay froze. I mean, I could walk from Umbrella Point all the way out to Fisher's Reef on pure ice.
Oh,
wouldn't fall through. That's how hard and frozen that ice was. It made the snakes and gators come out of the ground. The ground froze so hard.
Man, oh, man.
Yeah. Pretty nuts.
Yeah. Now, 89, you know, like you say, 89 was a hard, hard freeze. But, you know, I didn't see, I mean, we had a fish kill, you know, no doubt about that. But it was not anywhere near like 83. You know, as far as fish kill. I mean, it was bad.
89 was worse on us. It just, I mean, we didn't have any fish after that. I mean, it killed everything. I watched a crew boat run from Point Barra all the way to Ailey's, and the entire way out in the middle of the bay out there in that 8 and 10 feet of water, that prop on that big crew boat, that wheel wash, it was just rolling up just millions of dead trout and redfish. The oyster boats, they'd pick their dredge up and it'd have dead fish in it while they were oystering.
That's how bad
it was.
Boy, it makes you sick, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. You go fish all day. You catch 7 or 8 trout. You were King Kong when you came to the dock. Most people fish all day and catch 1 or 2. It was bad. But we bounced back quick. I mean, by 93, 94, 95, we had tons of fish.
Man, oh, man. Well, that's one good thing about the trout and redfish. They come back pretty good. Yeah, they do. But, of course, the hatcheries have definitely helped out. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
They've helped us out a lot. Yeah. They've helped us out a bunch. But, man, oh, man. I just keep my fingers crossed every winter, you know, hoping we never have another 83.
I know.
Or 89. Yeah.
Boy, I'm telling you.
Man, we don't need another freeze like that.
The longer you've been in this business, the more stuff you've seen, and it's we've seen the best of it and the worst of it, without a doubt.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, that's why we all started, you know, tarpon fishing and offshore fishing in 90 and 91 through that, you know, those early years in the 90s. It wasn't worth your time and effort in the bay.
Right. And that's why a lot of the guides, the bay fishing guides, ended up going and fishing the jetties. I mean, they just, that's the only place the fish were, you know, that was it. And, I mean, they just had to.
You had to go out, brother.
I know. No doubt about it. So, you know, you do what you have to do. But
I just got a text from a listener, old Gun Show Joe, said he's in Talladega and said it's going to be 42 degrees there tonight. Boy, I said, send
me some goodness.
Of that. Boy, wouldn't that be nice?
Bring it down. Bring it on.
Come on down, baby.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, I want to get down and do some coyote hunting, but I don't want to sit in a stand. It's too hot, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't want to sit in a stand. You know, I'm sure don't want to sit out there in the brush with the ticks and everything, you know, right now. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. But, no, this buddy of mine's got this ranch down there between Freer and Cotulla. He wants me to come down and shoot some coyotes, and I want to, but I just want a little cold snap first,
I'm with you on that. I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to get hot. I went down there fishing.
I went down there last year, and I went in one of my favorite blinds and opened my door and stuck my head in there and looked around, and one whole wall was red wasp. Solid. Red wasp. Oh, my goodness. Well, he keeps a can of wasp spray right at the door of every stand, you know. And Bob picked that wasp spray up, and and I just smoked those wasps, man.
You get every one of them, because if you don't, they're coming after you, man. You make a mess, especially yellow jackets. Yellow jackets are nasty.
These are those red wasps. My goodness. And I covered them up. The floor was solid with red wasps. I sprayed them and shut the door real quick. And I came back the next day, and that whole floor was just covered in them. I had to take a broom and sweep them out of there, man. Oh, my goodness. It was terrible.
Hey, I had one get in the house about 2 weeks ago, and my wife's got a fly swatter, and she can't reach the ceiling. And I said, give me that fly swatter. I'll get rid of them for you. Here's how you kill a wasp. And it started hovering next to one of the light fixtures, and I smacked it. And then I couldn't find it. Well, where'd it go? And I'm looking all over the floor. I'm looking there. I said, where'd that wasp go? So a few minutes later, I went in there in the den and sat in my recliner and turned the TV on. When I put my arm down on that chair, I found that wasp. He was stung, but he still stung me right under my elbow.
Goodness.
I jumped out of that chair. I said, what was that? And I saw that wasp. I said, well, here's that wasp we've been looking for.
Mm-hmm. He got even. With you.
I killed him, and he killed me.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. But,
I mean, it's not near as bad as a yellow jacket sting.
Oh, man. Yeah. I always think about what...
Backed up into a yellow jacket nest in a big old wolf bush one time. We were dove hunting, and... I don't know how bad it would have been if I hadn't had jeans on. And
my goodness.
I kind of backed into that nest, and, buddy, they all hit me right in the buttocks, as Forrest Gump would say, and hit me up. And luckily, one of my doctor buddies was hunting with me, and he had some Benadryl in his bag in the truck. Because, man, I was starting to feel bad. It was hot. You know how you get. And took a couple of them. I was good to go. We kept shooting doves. Got to get them, man, even while they're hot. I was hot, all right, in the rear end.
Well, the worst I ever got stung was old Ron Elkins and I were going to replace a ground blind at a friend of ours' ranch in Carrizo Springs. Mm-hmm. And we had a ground blind that was sitting on a pallet on top of some cinder blocks. Well, the bees had a hive in that pallet on the floor of that blind.
Oh, boy.
And so we were going to replace that blind. Well, we had a real brain idea. We said, we're just going to put a rope through the windows of that old blind, and we're going to attach it to his trailer hitch, and we're going to jerk that blind off that cinder block, and we're going to drag it down the Sendera. And then we're going to put that other blind with a front-end loader. We're going to just put that new blind right in place. Well, anyway, we took that new blind over there with that front-end loader. I'm sitting about probably 30 yards from that old blind. And I gave Elkins the signal, do it. And he took off, jerked that old blind off those cinder blocks, and was dragging it down the Sendera. Well, I'm over there behind that front end loader, hiding behind it. It took those bees about a second to find me. And, buddy, I'm here to tell you, I had about 30 stings on top of my head.
Ron's probably looking back going, why is Lynn rolling on the ground like that?
Oh, I was running after him. I was running after him, trying to catch him. And he finally stopped, thank goodness. And he opened the door, and I jumped in the truck with him, along with about 20 bees. But as soon as those bees got in his truck, they quit going after me. But I bet you I had 25 or 30 stings.
That's nasty. Boy,
my head swelled up like a basketball. Yeah. I guarantee you.
Head on you like Eddie Munster. All right, buddy.
Man.
Well, hey, Lynn, you have a good Sunday. If somebody wants to call you about coming down and fishing with you or going hunting this winter, give them a number so they can reach you, man.
You betcha, man. They can get me at 361-935-6833.
That'll work. All right, Lynn, you take care, bud. See you, man.
You too, Mick. You have a good one, buddy.
I'll do her later. All right, it's time for our top of the hour break and national anthem. We'll be right back.